Many people have become agnostics because of the supposed conflict between the Bible and science. In truth, there is no conflict at all between a correct translation of the Bible and really proven science, not just unproven theories. One of these supposed conflicts is between the fact that science knows that human beings have lived on the earth far longer than the few thousand years covered by the Bible, and the common belief that the Bible says that Adam was the first man. But the truth is that the Bible nowhere says that Adam was the first man. Yes, I know that most of the preachers say that, but the Bible does not say it. It merely says that Adam was the first man of a new white race. The many mistranslations in the King James Version obscure much of the truth. For example, Genesis 1, verses 1 and 2. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, as though God made it all a complete mess. In the Hebrew, however, it says, now the earth had become chaotic and empty. For example, see Rotherham's emphasized Bible. That is, some early catastrophe had wrecked the earth, which was not without form and void before that. This was a judgment of God on earlier civilizations for their wickedness. Jeremiah 4, verses 23 to 27 gives us a vision of it. I beheld the earth, and lo, it was without form and void, and the heavens, and they had no light. I beheld the mountains, and lo, they trembled, and all the hills moved lightly. I beheld, and lo, there was no man, and all the birds of the heavens were fled. I beheld, and lo, the fruitful place was a wilderness, and all the cities thereof were broken down at the presence of the Lord and by his fierce anger. For thus hath the Lord said, the whole land shall be desolate, yet will I not make a full end. Therefore we do find buried ruins of cities older than Adam, and skeletons which can be dated by the carbon-14 process as many thousands of years older. But the Bible tells us about this. Next, the Bible tells the creation of men in the plural in Genesis 1, verses 26 to 28, saying, male and female created he them. And God told these people, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. Plenish is an obsolete English word meaning to fill, and you cannot replenish what was never plenished or filled before. But in the next chapter, Genesis 2, we find the Adam in the singular created. The Hebrew word Adam, rendered Adam in the English, is from a root word meaning to be of a ruddy complexion, showing blood in the face. A word obviously not applicable to the dark races, which we also know from scientific evidence to be much older than the white race. And when the Bible is speaking of the particular man, Adam, who was created in Genesis chapter 2, it always says the Adam. Bible scholars know that Genesis 3 verse 20, and Adam called his wife's name Eve because she was the mother of all living, is a forgery, a later interpolation which was not in the earlier manuscripts. For example, see Moffat's translation. In Genesis 3 verse 3, when Eve tells Satan that God has said that they must not touch the fruit of the tree of good and evil, the word there translated touch is the Hebrew word noga, meaning to lie with, to have sexual intercourse with, which plainly shows that these were people and that there were other people in the world at that time. The fourth chapter of Genesis records the birth of Cain and Abel. In the Hebrew, the wording suggests that they were twins. No other child of Eve is mentioned until the birth of Seth, when Adam was 130 years old, certainly long after the birth of Cain and Abel, which most scholars say was over a century earlier. Yet, when Cain killed Abel and in punishment was driven out of the land, he complained to God that anyone that findeth me shall slay me. That's Genesis 4, verse 14. Also, Genesis 4, verse 17 records that upon being sent away, Cain found in the land to which he went many other people, because he not only married a wife, but found enough people there to build a city. These were the pre-Adamite races mentioned in the latter part of Genesis chapter 1. The Garden of Eden was not a plantation of ordinary trees and shrubs. God did nothing so foolish as to make a special creation just to have a man to wield shovel and pruning shears, when he already had millions of pre-Adamite peoples available for that sort of work. We are told that the Garden of Eden contained the tree of the knowledge or experience of good and evil. Now, no tree of the forest has any knowledge or experience of either good or evil. And the 31st chapter of Ezekiel says, "Behold, the Assyrian was a cedar in Lebanon, with fair branches and a shadowing bough, and of a high stature. Therefore his height was exalted above all the trees of the field, and his boughs were multiplied, and his branches became long. All the fowls of heaven made their nests in his boughs, and under his branches did all the beasts of the field bring forth their young. And under his shadow dwelt all great nations." The cedars in the garden of God could not hide him. The fir trees were not like his boughs, and the chestnut trees were not like his branches, nor any tree in the garden of God was like unto him in his beauty. "I have made him fair by the multitude of his branches, so that all the trees of Eden that were in the garden of God envied him." Obviously, the trees in the Garden of God in Eden were family trees of races and nations who admired and envied the early Assyrian Empire, for an ordinary wooden tree can't envy anybody. These races and nations made up the garden that Adam was to cultivate. That is, Satan had been what we might call the superintendent or governor of this planet, to rule it in obedience to God's will, until he forfeited that position by rebellion against God. Adam was sent to take his place. It was Adam's job to rule the various nations and races of the earth as God's representative here, educating them in God's laws and enforcing obedience to those laws. These other races and nations had been here many thousands of years before Adam. Therefore, the Bible makes it unmistakably clear that we are not all descended from Adam and Eve, for there were other races on earth, already old, already numerous, when Adam was created. And among these other races, there are several who are simply pre-Adamic, and one at least, which is satanic. If you will read the third chapter of Genesis, you will notice that immediately after the fall of Adam, when God required them to answer what they had done, God condemned Satan. The word mistranslated serpent here is the Hebrew word nokesh, which literally means enchanter or magician. And no doubt Satan, still possessing many of his angelic powers, was able to be an enchanter or magician. It is certain that the one who seduced Eve was no mere scaly snake wriggling along the ground. Yes, I said seduced Eve, for that is what she admitted in the original Hebrew, and Cain was the son of that seduction. The Bible uses the word begat with monotonous regularity in tracing family trees, but the first time the Bible ever says that Adam begat anyone is Genesis 5, verse 3, where it says, "And Adam lived 130 years and begat a son in his own likeness after his image, and called his name Seth." But to get back to Genesis 3, verse 15, God said to Satan, "I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed." The same Hebrew word for seed is used in both cases. Satan was to have just as literal seed or descendants as Eve. God's own word being pledged to this, we must expect to find it actually happening. And we do. Jesus Christ himself tells us of it. In Matthew 13, verses 38 and 39, in explaining the parable of the tares among the wheat, Jesus says, "The field is the world. The good seed are the children of the kingdom, but the tares are the children of the wicked one. The enemy that sowed them is the devil." Again in John 6, verses 70 and 71, Jesus had been talking with his 12 disciples, and we read, "Jesus answered them, 'Have not I chosen you 12? And one of you is a devil.' He spake of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, for he it was that should betray him, being one of the 12." And again you should read very carefully the 8th chapter of the Gospel of John, where Jesus told those who hated him, "Ye are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do." He was not being vulgarly abusive in either of these cases, for he never resorted to name-calling for abuse. He did call some of them hypocrites, which they truly were, so his statement was precisely accurate. He did call some of them serpents, children of vipers, which again was accurate. Long before this, the children of Satan had adopted the serpent as a symbol or emblem of Satan. And that is why their tradition eventually gave the word Nakash the secondary meaning of serpent, when its original true meaning is enchanter. Jesus therefore was telling them that they were of their father the devil, or serpent if they preferred that word. In this he was simply stating a biological fact with scientific precision and identifying the persons of this ancestry. Whenever someone tells you that the Bible is in conflict with what modern science has proved true, don't you believe it. The things that many preachers teach are in conflict with scientific truth, as we all know. But these preachers are equally in conflict with the Bible. Go back to the Bible, not to any man-made doctrines, and double-check it for accuracy of translation. You will find that what the Bible really says in its original languages is accurate with a precision that our scientists have not yet achieved. This is Bertrand L. Comperé, and I have a few things in my mind about which I'd like to talk to you. The first of these is the fact that, contrary to what is taught in most churches, Noah's flood was not worldwide. Among the many mistaken and unscriptural notions commonly taught in nearly all churches is the idea that the flood mentioned in the Bible covered all the earth and drowned everybody on earth excepting only Noah and his family, who escaped death by being in the ark. So many churches have firmly insisted that the Bible says this, when there is ample proof that the flood was not worldwide, that they have destroyed the faith of multitudes of people in the Bible, made atheists or agnostics out of hundreds of thousands of people who might have become Christians if they had only been taught the truth about the Bible. Part of this mistaken idea about the flood is due to the many mistranslations found in the commonly used King James Version of the Bible. But also, part of it appears plainly to be false if you merely carefully read even the King James Version. Let's have a look at this. In Genesis chapter 6, we read that God found the people so corrupt that he regretted that he had ever created them, and so he decided to wipe them out by a flood. And he warned righteous Noah of the coming flood, and told Noah to build a great boat or ark in which he and his family might find safety, and where they might preserve a few of each kind of the animals. In chapter 7, it tells how Noah received the final warning that the time was now at hand, and that he should move into the ark. Then it says, according to the King James Version, "And it came to pass after 7 days that the waters of the flood were upon the earth. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened. And the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. And the waters prevailed, and were increased greatly upon the earth, and the ark went upon the waters. And the waters prevailed exceedingly upon the earth, and all the high hills that were under the whole heaven were covered. 15 cubits upward did the waters prevail, and the mountains were covered. And all flesh died that moved upon the earth, both of fowl and of cattle and of beast, and of every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth, and every man. And the waters prevailed upon the earth 150 days. And God remembered Noah and every living thing, and all the cattle that was with him in the ark. And God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters assuaged. And the waters returned from off the earth continually. And after the end of the 150 days, the waters were abated. And the ark rested in the 7th month, on the 17th day of the month, upon the mountains of Ararat. And the waters decreased continually until the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the 1st day of the month, were the tops of the mountains seen." Now, first let's see what the translators have done to what Moses originally wrote. You remember that the King James Version says that the rain was upon the earth, and the waters increased greatly upon the earth, and that all flesh died that moved upon the earth. But are they right in translating this, the earth? Definitely not. Remember that in Genesis 4:14, when God has driven Cain away in punishment for his murder of Abel, the King James Version quotes Cain as saying, "Behold, thou hast driven me out this day from the face of the earth." So what did Cain do? Climb into his rocket ship and take off for outer space? Of course not. He was not driven from the face of the earth, and he never said so. Only the translators said so. The word Cain used was Adamah, meaning the ground. God had told him that his farming would no longer be successful. So Cain says, "Thou hast driven me off of the ground." And you have probably noticed that Cain's descendants today are not farmers. They run pawn shops and other money-lending institutions. When we come to the 7th chapter of Genesis, where it is talking about the flood, wherever it says that the flood covered the earth, the Hebrew word used in the original writing by Moses was Eretz, meaning the land. The flood did cover that particular land where it occurred. That is, it was a local flood which covered one particular region or land, but not the whole earth. Again, notice that it specifies that 15 cubits upward did the waters prevail, and the mountains were covered. In ancient times, two different lengths of the cubit were in use. The Hebrew sacred cubit of 25 inches and the common cubit of 20 5/8 inches. Therefore, the waters rose above the tops of the mountains of which it is speaking by either 25 feet 9 inches or 31 feet 3 inches, according to which cubit you use. If this meant that all the mountains on earth were covered, the waters would have to cover Mount Everest, which is nearly 6 miles high. Therefore, all the earth would be covered by water 6 miles deep. In that case, where could it have run off to when the flood subsided? No, I don't mean that the Bible was that badly mistaken. Only the translators made this mistake, because they took a Hebrew word, Eretz, which means that land, and mistranslated it to mean the whole world. A little later, we shall look over the evidence which proves where that land was. But if the whole earth was covered by 6 miles of water, then all the nations must have been completely exterminated. Yet Babylonian, Egyptian, and Chinese history runs right through this period without a break. The Bible gives the date of Noah's flood as commencing in 2345 BC and ending in 2344 BC. In Lower Sumer, later called Chaldea, and which occupied the same plains of Shinar to which Noah's family journeyed after the flood, the city of Ur of the Chaldees was the leading city from about 2400 BC until about 2285 BC, and its history is not broken by any flood in this period. Farther to the north, Babylon was rising to power from about 2400 BC on, and reached a great height of civilization under the famous King Hammurabi, who lived at the same time as the Hebrew patriarch Abraham, about 2250 BC. And again, there is no break in this history due to a flood. In Egypt, the 11th dynasty began to reign about 2375 BC over a great and powerful nation. The 11th dynasty ruled Egypt to about 2212 BC and were followed by the 12th dynasty, which ruled to about 2000 BC. There was no break in the 11th dynasty at the time of Noah's flood, 2345 BC, and the nation continued to be large and powerful throughout this period. Reasonably accurate history of China begins nearly 3000 BC. The Shu King, the historic record of China, shows that King Yao came to the throne in 2356 BC, 11 years before the start of Noah's flood, and that he ruled China for many years after the flood. During the reign of King Yao, the Shu King reports that the Huang Ho River, which drains mountains and a great basin in Xinjiang province, had excessive floods for three generations. Here again, there was no break in history. The Chinese nation was not wiped out, but its own records show that it continued in existence right through the period of Noah's flood. Therefore, the Bible is correct in stating that the flood covered only Eretz, that land, and that the translators are wrong when they change the meaning of what Moses really wrote in the 7th chapter of Genesis and say that the flood covered all the earth. This leaves us ready to inquire where the flood did occur. For this, we will have to start with Adam and Eve and trace where they and their descendants went. They started out in the Garden of Eden. Genesis 2, verses 10 to 14 tells us that a river went out of Eden, and this river divided into four streams. It names these four rivers, Pison and Gihon, neither of which can be identified among the rivers existing today, and Hiddekel, which is the ancient name of the Tigris River, and Frath, the ancient name of the river Euphrates. The Tigris and Euphrates rise in what is today extreme southeastern Turkey, a little north of modern Iraq. Making some allowance for the fact that many rivers have changed their courses considerably in the course of several thousand years, this still places the Garden of Eden at the northern end of ancient Akkad. When Adam and Eve were driven out of the Garden of Eden, Genesis 3, verse 24 tells us that God placed cherubim with a flaming sword at the east side of the Garden of Eden to keep Adam and Eve from returning and having access to the Tree of Life. If this guard was to accomplish anything, it must have been placed between Adam and the Garden of Eden. So we see that Adam and Eve were driven out to the eastward. From Eden, Adam's course would naturally have led him across northern Iran, around the southern end of the Caspian Sea, into what was formerly called Chinese Turkestan, and today is known as Xinjiang Province, in the extreme west of China. In the southern part of Xinjiang, there is a great basin rimmed by high mountains on all sides, but with an outlet on the eastern end of it, through the mountains where the headwaters of the Huang Ho, the Yellow River, rises. This basin is today nearly all desert, but it bears the evidence of a fertile and heavily inhabited past. Explorers have found ruins of ancient cities uncovered by the drifting sands of the desert. Also, the known geological structure shows that in ancient times, at least, beneath this desert lay an enormous underground natural reservoir, great caverns filled with water, the same geological structure which furnishes artesian water in many parts of the world today. These underground reservoirs were covered by waterproof layers of rock, which kept the waters beneath from overflowing out on the land surface above them. In this mountain-rimmed basin, which was then a fertile, well-populated land, Adam and Eve, or at least their descendants of a few generations later, settled. You who listen to our program already know that Adam was not the first man. He was only the first man in the present white race. Adam and Eve found this land to which they had come already populated by an Asiatic people, among whom they had to live. Through the following generations, the inevitable happened. Wherever there is integration, then intermarriage and mongrelization of the races follows. But if God had no purposes in mind which could not be properly served by the Asiatic and Negro races, there would have been no reason for him to create Adam. Neither could the purposes which Adam and his descendants were intended to serve be fulfilled by a mongrelized race. The consequences of this mongrelization are described in Genesis 6, verse 5. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Again, we find that the word there mistranslated earth is the Hebrew word Eretz, which means only the land, that particular land. And there is reason for using that Hebrew word, for this was the place where integration and mongrelization had taken place, with its degenerative effects as compared to the qualities possessed by each race separately. We find confirmation of this in the reason why God spared Noah. In Genesis 6, verse 9, your King James Version of the Bible tells you that Noah was perfect in his generations. A meaningless phrase. When anything in the King James Version of the Bible fails to make good sense, it is a sign that you should go behind the mistranslation and see what the words were in the original Hebrew or Greek. The word here translated generations was the Hebrew word toledo, which means ancestry. That is, Noah was perfect in his ancestry, a thoroughbred, not a mongrel. Noah and his family were the last remaining pure-blooded Adamites in the world. Therefore, God needed to save them to carry out the purposes he had planned for the Adamic people. The mongrelized people among whom Noah and his family lived must be removed, else they would be a trap which would eventually lead to the complete end of the pure-blooded Adamites. Have we any other evidence to support our view that this was the region where Adam and Eve and their descendants settled? Yes. Remember that Adam and Eve were driven out of Eden to the eastward. Later, when Cain murdered Abel, and as a punishment was banished from the land where Adam and Eve lived, Genesis 4, verse 16 tells us that Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod on the east of Eden. The Hebrew word Nod means wandering. That is, in the upper Tigris and Euphrates valleys at the north of Eden, these rivers were running swiftly downhill from their mountain sources. Therefore, they cut themselves deep channels in the ground. And even today, we can find the traces of the ancient diversion dams built by the ancients to raise the water level up close to the surface of the ground so they would not have to pump it so high to get it into their irrigation canals. But further to the south, in the lower Tigris and Euphrates valleys, where the slope was no longer steep, the accumulation of silt picked up of the rivers where they ran swiftly was now settling to the bottom of the riverbeds, constantly raising the level, so that every high water season the rivers overflowed their banks and flooded the valleys, exactly the same as we have had in our own Mississippi Valley. These annual floods washed away the people's houses and sent them fleeing far away to high ground. Therefore, it was correctly called the land of Nod, the land of wandering. Here Cain settled and taught the people to build high dikes along the river banks, just as we have done along the banks of the Mississippi River. This enabled them to stop the annual floods, so they could now build permanent cities of good houses in the lower Tigris and Euphrates valleys, the land then called by its own inhabitants Sumer, and later called Chaldea. In a very few places, the Bible calls it the Plain of Shinar. That is, Cain went back westward from where Adam and Eve lived. It was thus that Cain started his great empire. Yes, Cain is a well-known historical character, not found only in the Bible, but he is known in history under another name. He established an empire which extended from the Persian Gulf to the Mediterranean Sea, and even took in some of the larger islands in the Mediterranean Sea. Someday I'll tell you about Cain and his empire, but that's another story. Another bit of evidence is found in Genesis 11, verse 2, which tells us that after the flood, Noah's descendants journeyed from the east until they came to the land of Shinar. Therefore, they must have come from some place east of the Tigris and Euphrates valleys. And the only place where such a flood as the Bible describes could have occurred, eastward from the Tigris and Euphrates valleys, is this mountain basin in Sinkiang, which I have been talking about. Another bit of evidence is found in the high water mark found in many places along the mountains which rim this basin, showing that at one time this basin was a lake extending to this well-marked shoreline. The mountains which rim this valley were not fully covered, for many of them range from 16,000 to 25,000 feet in height, and one even rises more than 28,000 feet. But within the basin are several smaller mountains which could be fully covered by a flood held within the higher rim of the valley. In short, this basin, through which flows the Tarim River, and which is sometimes known as the Tarim Basin in southern Sinkiang, is identified as the site of Noah's flood. In your King James Version, Genesis 7, verses 11 and 12 read, "In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were open. And the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights." More careful translation makes clear what really happened. In Moffat's Modern English Translation we read, "The fountains of the great abyss all burst, and the sluices of heaven were opened." In Smith and Goodspeed's American translation it says, "The fountains of the great abyss were all broken open, and the windows of the heavens were opened." That is, a great earthquake broke up the waterproof layer of rock over the immense water-filled abyss or cavern beneath this Tarim Basin, causing the floor of the valley to settle and allowed an enormous underground reservoir to overflow and to submerge the valley floor. The great earthquake in the Himalaya Mountains about 10 years ago produced similar effects in some places. Of course, the 40 days of torrential rains added to the flood. This filled the valley high enough to submerge the low mountains which were inside the valley. This is exactly as Genesis 7, verses 19 to 20 says. Don't be misled by the mistranslation, "All the high hills that were under the whole heaven were covered." The word mistranslated heaven is merely the Hebrew word shamah, meaning the sky. Since this Tarim Basin is somewhat more than 350 miles wide by more than 650 miles long, all the sky visible from anywhere near the center of this valley would cover only this valley, and therefore only those lower mountains which were within the valley itself. But what about Genesis 8, verse 4, reading, "And the ark rested in the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, upon the mountains of Ararat"? Sometimes failure to translate can be just as misleading as outright mistranslation. Most people understand this to mean Mount Ararat in Armenia, some 1,600 miles west of the Tarim Basin. But this is not what the Bible says. First of all, note that it says mountains of Ararat, mountains being in the plural, while Mount Ararat in Armenia is only a single peak. But Mount Ararat in Armenia was known until comparatively recent times as Mount Massus, and nobody had ever heard of it being called Mount Ararat in Bible times. Furthermore, the Hebrew word Ararat means only the tops of the hills. Therefore, correctly translated, Genesis 8 verse 4 merely says that the ark came to rest upon the tops of the high hills, some of the lower mountains which were within the Tarim Valley. A recent newspaper report mentions an expedition equipped with the latest electronic equipment which is going to Mount Ararat in Armenia to find the ark, and which will melt the ice which covers the ark by coating it with black powdered carbon. But they won't find Noah's ark, for it is not there. Several expeditions have gone to this Mount Ararat to find the ark, and some of them got within sight of a mast on the side of a mountain, which, from that particular point of view, looked to be shaped somewhat like a ship. That point has been very carefully inspected from the air by airplanes flying over it very close, and it has proved to be nothing but a ledge of rock, which does give a silhouette shaped like a ship when seen from the right direction. I needn't mention the many places, such as the Grand Canyon and so forth, where similar ship rocks can be seen, and none of them are Noah's Ark. So when we carefully examine the whole affair and correct the mistranslations, we find there is no conflict between what the Bible really says and either science or history. In fact, there never is any such conflict. It is only the preachers who find themselves contradicted by either science or history. And that is only because they either won't take the trouble to find out what the Bible really says, or because they have made the mistranslation a supposedly sacred church doctrine, and now they are stuck with it. Don't let any church shake your faith in the Bible. The Bible is always right, even if the churches are often wrong. Let us remember another thing. The ancient Chinese historical record, the Shu King, records that during the reign of King Yao, at a time beginning about the date of Noah's flood, the Huang Ho carried excessive floods for three generations. Drainage out of the Tarim Basin to the eastward would have been carried off in the Huang Ho River and would account for this. Now we come to another false doctrine taught in many churches, that since nobody survived in all the earth except Noah and his family, everybody now living is a descendant of Noah and related by blood, no matter what race they belong to. But we have already seen that the flood did not cover the whole earth, but only one valley, about 350 by 650 miles in size. The Chinese history was not interrupted by it, although they do record purely local floods in the Huang Ho Valley, where the waters were draining off. We have seen that Egyptian history is not interrupted by the flood, so the continent of Africa was not touched by it, and the Negro race continued unaffected by it. It would be absurd to think that Noah and his wife, both of them being white, could have one white child, one Negro child, and one Chinese child. Remember that in Genesis 1, verses 11 to 25, when God created the world and its inhabitants and made the laws governing their reproduction, he did not make it absurd chaos with whales giving birth to cattle and fish hatching out of birds' eggs. His law, repeated several times for emphasis, is always that each creature must bring forth strictly after his own kind. The churches which teach this false doctrine of everybody being descended from Noah never got it out of the Bible, that is, in any true translation of the Bible. As Moses wrote it in the Hebrew language, under divine inspiration, the Bible correctly tells that Noah's descendants went out into a world already populated by people who had lived right through the time of the flood and were still going strong. Farrar Fenton's Modern English translation gives this correctly. In Genesis 10, verses 1 to 5, we read of the descendants of Noah's son Japheth, and it says, "From these they spread themselves over the sea coasts of the countries of the nations, each with their own language amongst the Gentile tribes." Genesis 10, verse 20 tells of the descendants of Noah's son Ham. "These were the sons of Ham in their tribes and languages in the regions of the heathen." Genesis 10, verse 31 completes it. "These are the sons of Shem, by their tribes and by their languages, in their countries among the heathen." So never let anybody tell you that the Bible consists of the fables of a primitive people. It is perfectly consistent with all true science and all true history. It is the history of our race, the Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, and Teutonic white race. Tonight I've got something a little different in mind. Heretofore, I've been talking only about Israel, because we, the Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, and Teutonic peoples, are the Israel of the Bible, and the Bible is Israel's book. But tonight I want to take in a still bigger field, the Adamic race. Fully 98% of everything you've ever been told in your churches is false. Most of it told with good intentions because they don't know any better. You've been told, of course, that Adam was the father of the whole human race, and then it was all wiped out except eight persons, and Noah was the father of the whole human race, Chinaman, Negro, as everybody since then. The Bible never makes any such statement, but the preachers do. They've made a church doctrine, and they're stuck with it. Adam was not the first human being, and the Bible never says he was. Now, the Bible uses three different words that have been indiscriminately translated man in most of your Bibles. There is the word ish, which literally means a male person, and also it means a husband, and it can be used correctly of a man of any race. Then the Bible uses the word, in the Hebrew, the word Enosh, which literally means mortal, and it has a general connotation,
of a most unfavorable sort, weakness morally as well as physically. That is not used of God's people Israel or even the real Adamic race. Now the third word, the Hebrew word Adam, which has been anglicized into Adam, its root meaning is of a ruddy, fair complexion, which, as you can see, leaves the dark races out. Now, we find skeletons of other races so old that they're even fossilized when it comes to the Turanian or Mongoloid race. Some of them have been estimated as around 600,000 years old. Well, that's only a guess, of course, and assume they're wrong by 200,000 years either way. It's still a long time before the Adam of the Bible. Identifiably Negroid skeletons have been found that can be dated by some of the radioactive processes as approximately 70,000 years old, which again is way before the time of the Bible's Adam. There are over 27,000 places in your commonly used King James Version of the Bible where it is mistranslated. I have my own private theory that there is some sub-basement of hell heated especially hot for the translators. But then that's my own personal theory, and I can't quote you a Bible verse on it. But these truths have been concealed until a few scholars in recent times started digging back into the original languages to see what it said. In the first chapter of Genesis, it starts out, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, which is correct. No date is given. 15 minutes ago, 15 billion years ago, anything you want to read into it, no date is given. Then your King James Version says, and the